Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo, and it is my great pleasure to introduce you to the festival's 2014 season, Around Dvorak. Music at Menlo's 2014 season explores dual facets of the unfolding of Western music throughout the classical and romantic eras and into the 20th century. Catalyzed by a lineage of composers from Haydn and Mozart, through Schubert and Brahms, to Schoenberg, Webern, and Berg a generation later, Vienna emerged as the epicenter of a dynamic musical tradition that remains central to the canon today. Meanwhile, starting in the latter half of the 19th century, the folk traditions of Hungary, Romania, and the Czech lands permeated Western classical music, as composers like Bedřich Smetana, Leoš Janáček, Béla Bartók, and Zoltán Kodály awakened to the richness of their own musical heritage and sought to cultivate a distinct musical voice. At the center of this dialectic was Antonín Dvořák, the self-described simple Czech musicant who likewise possessed the romantic ferocity of his mentor, Johannes Brahms. No other composer so fluently integrated the dual traditions of Western classicism and Central European folk music, developing a distinct musical language whose influence would be felt as far as the United States. This season, Music at Menlo offers 8 colorful concert programs that revolve around Dvorak, taking listeners on a thrilling journey between Vienna, Prague, and other fascinating musical destinations along the way. Audio notes are designed to enhance your enjoyment and deepen your appreciation of the music you'll be hearing at the festival. I'll be joined by artistic co-director Wu Han, Audio Notes author and producer Patrick Castillo, and some of this season's festival artists to offer historical and cultural context and a variety of perspectives on this summer's concert programs. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you at the festival.
The 2014 season's conclusion juxtaposes the earthly with the sublime. Following Dagnani's lush serenade for string trio, the program offers the powerful string sextet by the under-recognized Czech master Erwin Schulhoff. One of the most original voices of his generation, Schulhoff, encouraged as a child to compose by the great Antonín Dvořák, found his career suppressed by the Nazi regime during the Second World War. The visceral energy of his sextet captures the strength of his musical identity. Dvorak's glorious piano quintet, one of the most beloved works in the literature, answers the resolute strength of Schulhoff's sextet with a message of transcendent beauty.
The program begins with music by the Czech composer Bedřich Smetana. An artistic forebear to Dvořák, Janáček, and others, Smetana was the first of Central Europe's nationalist composers to explicitly acknowledge and integrate his cultural heritage into his musical language. Bohemian folk song served not only as a chief influence, but indeed as the foundation of his compositional vocabulary. Smetana lived from 1824 to 1884, during which period Bohemia was under Austro-Hungarian rule. Austria's cultural influence over the region ensured the primacy of Viennese classicism in music, and certainly, Smetana's musical language was rooted in the tradition of Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven. But he was also responsible for bringing Bohemian folk music to the attention of the Western musical world. Owing partly to this, he is recognized in the Czech Republic today as a national cultural hero, exceeding even Dvořák. For while Dvořák's music has since received more global recognition, it was Smetana who founded the Bohemian musical idiom built upon in Dvořák's works. Furthermore, Smetana made his mark not only as a composer, but as a pianist, conductor, and teacher as well, thus playing a far-reaching role in the establishment of a national musical tradition. Benjamin Britten once remarked, quote, "Smetana's debt to his own national music was of the best kind, unconscious. He did not borrow. He carried on an age-long tradition, not of set purpose, but because he could no more avoid speaking his own musical language than he could help breathing his native air. End quote. Smetana went suddenly deaf at the age of 50. After the loss of his hearing, he created one of his most significant chamber works, his String Quartet No. 1, subtitled From My Life. Smetana composed only a few pieces of chamber music, but what chamber scores he did produce are deeply personal. Alongside the autobiographical From My Life Quartet, perhaps his best-known chamber work is his piano trio, a programmatic and emotionally fraught work, lamenting the death of his young daughter. His chamber music catalog is rounded out by an early fantasy and a bohemian folk song for violin and piano, his second string quartet, composed near the end of his life, and another work from his later years, Zdomovini, or From My Homeland. From My Homeland comprises two short pieces for violin and piano. The music is intimate and deeply felt. Smetana wrote of these pieces, quote, "They are written in a simple style with a view to being performed in the home rather than at concerts. They are genuinely national in character, but with my own melodies." End quote. The first of the two pieces features a long and pining violin melody. The music's character is heartfelt and nostalgic, befitting an aging composer, by now completely deaf and in failing health, reflecting on the homeland he loves so fervently. Midway through the movement, the music becomes more animated, offering a blithe contrast to the wistfulness that permeates the rest of the piece. The second piece, an andantino in G minor, begins in dramatic fashion. Following this declamatory introduction unfolds a rhapsodic bohemian fantasy. This movement, too, like the first, turns lively, remedying the nostalgic mood with a boisterous peasant dance. The program continues with Ernst von Dohnányi's Serenade in C major, Opus 10, for violin, viola, and cello. The Opus 10 Serenade, composed in 1902, arguably represents Dohnányi's first mature work. Although the Opus 1 Piano Quintet, featured on the summer 7th concert program, is a masterpiece in its own right. In the Serenade, we hear a departure from the influence of Schumann and Brahms. In the Serenade, you can still hear that Dohnányi cut his teeth on the music of the Romantic period. And the Medium, trio of violin, viola, and cello, represents a repertoire tradition dating to the classical period. Haydn wrote 21 such pieces. Mozart contributed his famous Divertimento to the trio literature. And Beethoven produced 5 before trying his hand at the string quartet. And while in both its form and its idiom, the Opus 10 Serenade evokes the music of previous eras, the work ultimately and emphatically asserts Dohnányi's voice as a composer. A stately march serves as the serenade's extroverted curtain raiser. Double and even triple-stopped chords create the illusion of a larger ensemble than the seemingly modest string trio. And even in the puffed-up trappings of a march, Dohnányi's lyrical gift is in evidence. It's worth taking a moment to just mention that string trios are difficult, both for the composer and for the performers. Given that the classical tradition is based on four-part harmony, which you naturally have in a string quartet, when writing a string trio, the composer has fewer options for filling out the harmony and texture. And there are pitfalls that the composer has to navigate in terms of balance and register. And on the performer side of the coin, the writing for each instrument tends to be more soloistic than in a string quartet, and the logistics of working out the ensemble more demanding. So, with that in mind, we can appreciate how expertly constructed is Dohnányi's serenade, and in particular, the second movement romance. Dohnányi crafts this elegant movement so that each instrument shines equally, playing in the most resonant part of its register and without sacrificing textural clarity. The movement begins with an emotionally stirring viola solo, accompanied by delicate pizzicati in the violin and cello. And then, accompanied by restless viola figurations, the violin and cello play not exactly a duet, but simultaneous melodic utterances, which Dohnányi fits together superbly.
He's an incredible lyricist.
Violinist Alexander Sitkovetsky.
He's such a versatile composer. There's always in his piece so many different things going on.
The Serenade's third movement is a fiendish scherzo, markedly different in character from the romance, but equally impeccable in Dohnányi's management of instrumental texture. ¶¶ Next comes a theme and variations movement. Tohnani's theme is simple, yet deeply expressive.
For people who are familiar with the serenade, for example, the fourth movement, where he uses the same theme in three different keys throughout the movement. It's a theme in variations, and especially the last variation, which is basically a viola solo, and then the cello and the violin are accompanying. The viola plays exactly the same thing three times, and it sounds completely different because he's managed to harmonize it in such different ways.
The serenade's rondo finale evokes some of the folk character so prevalent in the music of Tohnani's countrymen.
Very virtuosic writing, so it's effective for the audience. Every last movement so far is so brilliant and exciting. I think also one of the things that musicians love about Tohnani is that it's so much fun to play. And we hope that the audience also think that it's great. But for us, it's like, whenever I've done any piece of Tohnani, it's like, yes. Because there's so much stuff to do. And also he writes very, very well for the strings, for example. And it's not as often programmed as many other pieces. And I think it easily could be.
The Czech composer and pianist Erwin Schulhoff showed prodigious musical talent as a child, and in 1901, when he was 7 years old, received all the encouragement he would need to pursue a career in music, the recommendation of Antonín Dvořák. After 3 years of private instruction, Schulhoff enrolled in the Prague Conservatory as a piano student, then continued his training in Vienna, Leipzig, where he studied with the composer Max Reger, and Cologne. His compositional pedigree also included lessons with Claude Debussy. After serving in World War I, Schulhoff returned home to Prague, where he was active as a composer, teacher, and pianist in both classical and jazz venues. In 1919, he relocated once again to Germany, where he worked as an advocate for contemporary music, organizing concerts of music by the second Viennese composers and other strands of the avant-garde. His steady interaction with a broad range of new musical styles during this time is audible in his own far-reaching musical language. In the 1930s, living again in Prague, Schulhoff joined the Communist Party as a reaction to the rise of Nazism. When the Nazis occupied Czechoslovakia in 1939, he attempted, unsuccessfully, to flee to the Soviet Union. Schulhoff's communist affiliations, combined with his Jewish heritage, led to his internment in a concentration camp in Bavaria, where he died of tuberculosis in 1942. Schulhoff cultivated an eclectic musical language, betraying diverse influences, including neoclassicism, impressionism, serialism, and other modernist idioms. But he found his most distinctly personal voice in the 1920s. His music during this period combines a strident harmonic language with the propulsive rhythmic vigor of jazz. Schulhoff's string sextet, composed between 1920 and 1924, reflects this chapter of his creative evolution. It's a dark and challenging piece of music, not only reflecting the composer's dissonant, hyper-expressionist style, but moreover befitting the tension and angst that pervaded 1920s Weimar Germany. The first movement, marked Allegro Risoluto, begins with bold fortissimo gestures, starting from the second cello and ascending to the first violin. This opening salvo introduces a militaristic march, marked by jarring cross rhythms and biting colors, pizzicati and collegno, striking the strings with the wood of the bow. Shulhoff consolidates this anguished cacophony of fragmentary utterances into a unified fortissimo cry. The movement's slower B section gives voice to the same anxiety, not with howls of panic, but with a languishing discomfiture. Whereas the A section featured collegno and other harsh sounds, Shulhoff here instructs the players to play concertino with mutes and sul tasto, bowing over the fingerboard, both of which effects dull the string instrument's brilliant tone. The second movement's tempo marking is tranquillo, but tranquility is the farthest thing from this music's expressive character. Accompanied by an unsettlingly quiet chromatic ostinato in the violins and first viola, the second viola and first cello present the bleak and sorrowful theme. Shulhoff instructs the players to play cantando ma senza espressione, singing but without expression. Later in the movement, this desolate music intensifies into a mournful wail. The violins present a third musical idea, marked again senza espressione, above anxiously swaying triplets in the lower strings. Shulhoff labels the sardonic, march-like third movement burlesca. The finale, marked Molto Adagio, begins with a somber cello soliloquy. The full ensemble joins in, and the music attempts to rise up, only to collapse in ruined fragments. A second attempt is likewise stopped short, as the music disperses in anxious chromatic whispers. The sextet ultimately ends quietly defeated. The season comes to a close with one of the most cherished works in the chamber music repertoire, Antonin Dvorak's Piano Quintet in A Major, Opus 81. The Opus 81 Quintet is actually the second piano quintet that Dvorak wrote. The first, also in A Major, was completed in 1872, but Dvorak was dissatisfied with it and destroyed the score. The piano quintet that survives began as an attempted revision of the earlier, unsuccessful work, but evolved into a completely new piece. Over a century later, it remains one of the definitive works of the piano quintet literature.
I think, what is it about the Dvorak quintet that makes it one of the most beloved piano quintets in the world, really? I think many different elements.
Pianist Anne-Marie McDermott.
There are some melodies in the Dvorak piano quintet that you just can't get out of your head. You know, the very opening of the first movement, the theme of the second movement. They just stick with you. They're just memorable. They're soulful. I think also that it is on such a huge scale. I mean, there are ravishingly beautiful moments to this piano quintet that are just sublime and delicious. And then there's the fun element, playing the piece. If you're not having some fun while you're playing the piece, I don't think you're doing the music justice. You know, I always find it fascinating when you can listen to just a couple of minutes of a composer and immediately be able to identify their voice. And Dvorak is one of those composers where his language is so unique, so personal. It's very, I mean, the qualities I attribute to Dvorak are tremendous lyricism, incredible passion, energy, vitality, charm, virtuosity. It's a very big palette that comes with Dvorak, and he's one of the composers where when you're playing Dvorak, you really are given license to just pour your heart and soul all over the stage. It kind of demands that and really resonates with people. If you've never heard, I envy people who've never heard the Dvorak Piano Quintet. I envy them that first time they can walk into a recital hall and hear this piece of music, because it's memorable. The first movement by itself is a whole journey. Just starts out with one of the all-time great cello solos.
The following passage demonstrates exquisite ensemble writing. Listen as Dvorak integrates all five players into a perfectly cohesive sound, as if they were all playing on one instrument. Dvorak expertly uses the same musical idea to write passages that are in turns tender and forceful. He continues to transfigure the first theme until finally a second melody surfaces in the viola. As with the first theme, Dvorak turns this sparse musical idea into a fiery and passionate statement. The development extends both themes even further, manically passing through a wide range of emotions.
Once the movement gets going, has a climactic moment in A major that's absolutely breathtaking. So it just incorporates such a huge palette emotionally. The second movement is a dumka, so it alternates between this really gorgeous, violas love playing this piece, gorgeous viola solo. And then these faster sections and going back and forth between these two sections, and it just makes it really interesting and captivating, and it tells a real story.
Thank you.
The third movement is the Furiant, which is a dance, is effervescent. It's light, it's virtuosic, full of character. You know, you can never escape having a folkloric essence with Dvorak's music, so you have that.
The theme carries the music into a broad, sweeping melody in the viola. Dvorak extends this melody and uses it to lead back to the opening theme and end the first section of the dance. The trio section presents a tranquil contrast to the scherzo. As he did in the first movement, Dvorak uses the same melody, but gives it a dramatically new inflection. The serenity of the trio flows seamlessly back into the jaunty music of the scherzo. The finale is a show of wit, humor, and boundless energy. It begins with a mischievous gesture, then immediately hides behind a silence, as if laughing at the listener. The sentence is punctuated with a loud exclamation point. The music immediately launches into a peasant dance. A new melody appears. The atmosphere turns wistful and nostalgic. Displaying his technical craftsmanship, Dvorak later highlights his finale with a riveting fugue. The music slows into a hymn-like chorale before making a brilliant finish. Thank you. Audio Notes are authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts on this disc appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Franz Liszt's Grand Duo Concertant, performed by violinist Chris Nichols and pianist Jonathan Aerst, and Bartok's duos for two violins, performed by Andras Kiss and Ferenc Balog, appear courtesy of Hyperion Records. George Ligeti's Sonata for Solo Cello is performed by Matt Heimowitz and appears courtesy of Deutsche Grammophon. Ernst von Dohnányi's Piano Quintet in C Minor Opus 1 is performed by Ensemble Raro and appears courtesy of Solo Musica. Bedrick Smetana's From the Homeland is performed by violinist Hejin Kim and pianist Yeva Yokubovich-Yute and appears courtesy of the performers. Erwin Schulhoff's String Sextet is performed by the Salzburg Hyperion Ensemble and appears courtesy of Paladino Music. Kodai's Serenade for Two Violins and Viola, performed by violinists Annika Vafian and Benjamin Bielman, and violist Paul Neubauer. Dohnányi's Serenade for String Trio, performed by violinist Adele Anthony, violist Paul Neubauer, and cellist Nicholas Alstedt. And Dvorak's Piano Quintet, performed by pianist Jeremy Denk, violinists Annika Vafian and Kristen Lee, violist Paul Neubauer, and cellist Andreas Brantelid, appear courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist Led.